Sharks fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Hello. Would you like to have a roll in the hay?
Well, maybe another time, because right now, the remarkably talented, the oh-so-edgy, and the deliciously pervy Gina Hunting is back for more of her signature sex education, and I can hardly wait. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 366, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
Herr Forkstein thought you might need a laboratory assistant temporarily.
Well, that's great for Herr Forkstein, but, you know, I'm not that kind of doctor. You know, you'll find more about Gina on her FetLife page and or on her Facebook page. She's, of course, Gina Hunting on both. She also wants me to alert you to one of her upcoming programs titled Women in Kink. Wink is open to all women who play with women. So if you feel that you belong in a woman's only space, then you belong in Wink. Look for all these links in today's podcast posting. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time.
Sometimes I'm afraid of the lightning.
Yes, that's generally not the kind of questions I get, but I understand. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that?
Suit yourself. I'm easy.
And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So, knock yourself out. Alrighty then. On with the show. Gina Hunting, thank you for coming back to drdicksexadvice.com for this sex education podcast. So glad that you could make it for another week, because last week we had such a good time together, and so insightful. Thank you for all of those things last week. And this week I'm guessing you will be just as effervescent. If not, well, I'm pulling the plug right now. That's it.
Okay. I'm on probation. Thanks for having me back.
Good. So, last week we were talking about, we ended our conversation about talking about the Center for Sex Positive Culture, and I want to talk now a little bit more specifically about the kind of stuff that you do there, and you identified some of the parties that you participate in and or facilitate. The first one is Blood, Sweat, and Queers, a monthly play party for queer folk. And the next one is Cat Fight Club, a quarterly women's party emphasizing wrestling, fighting, and takedowns. Hubba, hubba, hubba. And the final one is Bound, a quarterly women's party focusing on bondage in all of its forms. Now, these play parties raise some interesting questions. For one, why the importance of queer space, for example, with the Blood, Sweat, and Queers party?
this is a party that I've been running for, oh, wow, it's getting on to 2 years now.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And it's just a great mix of lesbians and gay men and trans folk of all sorts. And I really value those communities coming together. You know, the alphabet soup of LGBTIQ, WXYZ, what is it up to now, has been this kind of fractionated, taped together identity. And I really like the emerging queer identity, which is much more kind of radical, much more boundary blurring. I think one of the things that bugs me about LGBT, all of those things are, for example, you know, I could identify as lesbian more than queer, and lesbian is kind of defined in opposition to, it's what you can't do. It's a little tiny box, basically, that you can fit yourself into, but I don't like little boxes. And for me, queer is a big box that contains all of those LGBT, LMNOP, and allows you to move around a little bit more. So it allows people to play with sexual orientation. It allows people to play with gender identity. It doesn't make you take sides or decide what little box you want to be in. So and to get a place where queer people can come together and build that community and have a great time playing with each other, I think that's just a fantastic and very empowering thing.
I totally agree. In fact, I've always liked the word queer better than gay. I don't know, gay seemed weird to me for I don't know why exactly, but queer, that made sense. First of all, you know, when I was a kid, growing up in the 50s, that was a very hurtful word, and I've been able to desensitize that and make it my own. And now it just, you know, it feels so much better to me. And besides, I mean, I think you were touching upon this a little while ago when you were speaking about this very topic, is that sometimes in our, you know, gay community, lesbian community, bi community, these can be, you know, very torturous places for people who don't fit in exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like if you're a lesbian and you have strong connections with men, somehow you are dishonoring the lesbian community. The same thing for gay folk. And, you know, like, what is all that? I mean, and why do we have to do that to one another? So good thing that we have this thing called queer.
I very much agree. And I know that for the generation ahead of me, people born in the 40s and 50s, that many of them are not happy with that word because it still keeps that taint of hatred.
Yes.
So it is a reclaimed word and is not to everybody's taste. But if it were some other umbrella term, not necessarily that reclaimed one, I just like the concept of that bigger tint that can include more of us.
Because I like hanging out, you know, with straight women and lesbians and, you know, trans folk. And, you know, I don't feel like, I don't want to feel like, you know, that I'm crossing some, you know, divide that shouldn't be crossed because, you know, of my other affiliations. And I always found that really too confining. So good. So
yeah, and I think it's super fun to watch gay guys play because they play so differently, and they're hot. So
and they're limp wrist and everything. Oh my god! I absolutely love it. So how many people do you have for an average blood, sweat, and queers party?
We typically have between 90 and 100 people, sometimes more, sometimes less. But that's
really.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty vibrant.
Holy cow.
Yep. First Saturday of the month.
So I suppose the same is true for women-only space with the Cat Fight Club and the Women in Kink Conference, right?
Yes, absolutely. I very much enjoy women's space. There's just a kind of freeness, a freedom and playfulness and intensity that can come from women's only events. I've been involved with the kind of last generation of parties, Catfight Club and Bound. And really those came out of my desire. Catfight Club, I really enjoy kind of roughhousing, wrestling, fighting and takedowns. I really enjoy that kind of play. So I thought, how could I make more of this happen? Because I was really having trouble finding bottoms that had had any experience. Mm-hmm. How can I find these people? How can I nurture this part of the community? And so I thought, hey, why don't I just start a party? And that'll help get these people out of the woodwork and educate the people who have interests in that area. So taking that intention around kind of creating the community that I want to be a part of, creating the parties that I want to play at, I'm really vested in there being a vibrant women's community centered on the CSPC in Seattle. So and the women's parties at the CSPC have been ebbing and flowing, but kind of ebbing more. And I wanted to revitalize that. And so I thought, what could we do to get women energized, get women out, and not just the crusty old leather dykes, love the crusty old leather dykes, but really any woman who plays with women, mm-hmm. what could we do to get them out and get excitement going there? So so I started thinking, well, what if we just had a conference? It's been a while. It's been maybe 5 years since Seattle last had a women's conference. And so I just decided to put one on.
Very cool.
Got some of my trusted friends and colleagues and as co-conspirators on this event, and we've pulled it together. And as we're recording this conference comes up March 16th, 2013. Hopefully it's not too late for you to get your tickets and come. womeninkink.org is the website.
And that's how I first found you.
Oh, really?
Because I was helping promote that, or at least retweeting it, and then I went to the website and found you and some of my other friends, Kristen and Switchy Sam and
lovely people.
Yeah, so absolutely lovely people, and so it was a great connection to discover you as well. So thank you for that.
Awesome.
So let me just quickly ask you a question for these women only. Events, have you run into any problems in terms of cis women thinking less of you or not wanting to have you included in women-only events because you're trans?
Well, this has been an ongoing battle in women-centered events for decades. For as long as there have been visibly trans people,
right.
You know, notoriously the Michigan Women's Festival in the 70s and 80s, and ugliness can happen around this issue. The way the world has shifted since the Michigan Women's Festival over the intervening decades is really to look at self-identity, rather than looking at a female indication on the driver's license,
right.
Well, that's really leaving the decision up to the state. Is that
right.
Something?
Yes.
Ugh. Or
and you know how good they do.
Oh, they
at everything.
Love them.
Always have.
Yeah, yeah. Can I have another strip search at the airport, please? Yeah, or doing some kind of genitally oriented limits as to who can be and who can't be is ambiguous because there are intersex people and
yes.
They are wonderful as well, and B, because it's incredibly classist. Many trans people do not have the option, either medically or financially, of having bottom surgery, and so you're restricting it to people who are lucky enough to be blessed with conditions that are favorable. So our definition is for the Women in Kink Conference is that it's a party for women who play with women, and we let the women themselves define whether they feel comfortable in and appropriate and authentic as women in women-only space.
Right.
Anything else turns me into the gender police, and I am not going to do that.
Right. It's so true. You know, I mean, then what do you check for? I mean, do you check, you know, even somebody who's had genital reconstructive surgery, I mean, their DNA hasn't changed, so...
Right. Well, their presumptive DNA
is
gender for purposes of marriage and other things by DNA, and yet they don't test for it.
Right. It's amazing.
Like, ridiculous.
Right. Good. So,
Which is awesome, by the way. If there was a time there when the only place you could get married as a same-sex couple was a trans person marrying a cis person of the same gender,
yes.
So a trans woman marrying a cis woman in Texas. Yay, go team. Unintended.
Let's all move there. I know
yeah.
I am. So why is there a need for these specific places? And what are the challenges in defining? I mean, we talked about just a bit there in terms of genital definition, but communicating and enforcing the boundaries of these separate spaces.
Well, I think the need comes from queers have a long history of oppression by the straight world, and women have a long history of oppression, and those things put us on edge. They make the world a less safe space to be.
Mm-hmm.
And by creating these specific spaces, there's a kind of freedom. I think I used that word before, in fact.
Right.
Kind of freedom that comes from having those boundaries in place.
Right.
You don't have to be watching for threats, and you don't have to be treated as other.
Right.
'Cause we're all other here.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've been to a number of parties, kinky parties, basically, and you know, there have been times when I felt like I was like the token, you know, homo, and you know, it just seemed odd to me. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel at home. I didn't feel like I belonged there. And it wasn't anything that somebody was saying or doing necessarily. It was just this overpowering heterosexual vibe that was just like, oh my god.
And I think the same thing is true. There's a for people of color,
oh, yeah.
that which doesn't include me, and But there is a Seattle event for queer people of color called Raw Sugar. I think that's wonderful. I got a question from somebody about the Women in Kink Conference, about what have we done to try to make our event inclusive of people of color. And she said, I don't want to be the black dot.
It's true. It's so true.
But that was such a poignant way of putting that.
And thank God she had the wherewithal to make such a statement. Because yeah. it happens all the time. I hear it a lot myself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's such a great bit of kind of verbal imagery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I also know that you do lifestyle presentations, too. Your FetLife page says, I presented a workshop on rough handling with rope at Desire 212, or 2012, excuse me, 212, as well as running one-on-one mentoring on rope bondage, impact play, knife play, pressure points, and getting started as a top. Could you walk us through one of these workshops, perhaps?
Sure. The reason I started being interested in teaching is because I want to create the community that I want to be a part of. And I want to find the tops who like to play that I play the way that I do, because I want to learn from them. And I want to find the bottoms who play the way that I do, because I want to play with them. So Desire this last year was my first opportunity to teach a full class. Desire is a women's event that happens in Palm Springs in June. Wonderful event. So I got to teach something that's near and dear to my heart, which I called rough handling with rope, and kind of a almost unique way of approaching rope. That I really love. So I got to teach that, and then another aspect of Desire is running one-on-one mentoring sessions. So women, any Desire attendee gets to choose one of the instructors to spend an hour with to learn about a topic. Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. It's a lot of work as one of the instructors. That means that I'm working for 6 hours of the conference, working hard.
As a segue into our next area of conversation, I called attention to some of your other community activities. I was one of the judges for the 2011 Seattle Leather Daddy and Daddy Boy contest, and I am one of the organizers for the 2013 Leather Leadership Conference, which is such an important question from my point of view, because there is an intimate connection between the leather community and BDSM community, and not too many people know that history. And I think it's a gay thing or a queer thing and a straight thing, right?
Yeah, I would say that there have long been the independent communities of the gay leather community that came out of post-World War II, the biker clubs
that
emerged then. I'm sure there was gay BDSM before that, because there's always been kink in the world. The straight community was really kind of independent of that. The lesbians took up really, the leather dykes took up a lot of the trappings and the approaches of the gay leather community. So I was very much honored to be asked to be judge on this Seattle contest in 2011. And the contest, for those of you listeners who don't know, these are, you could think about them as beauty pageants for the kink world. Okay, that was maybe a little pejorative, but
I'm particularly fond of the bathing suit.
In being a judge really allowed me to see firsthand that these contests are about sharing our values, about saying this is the kind of behavior that's important to us.
And values community service.
Community service and integrity and passing knowledge down.
Yes.
These are all things that are integral parts of the leather community. And these contests are a way of saying, do you embody those? You embody those ideals. Let's give the prize for the year to you.
And you know, we talked about this briefly earlier in our conversation. And when I was coming out in San Francisco in the early 70s, there were basically two communities: gay communities, the drag community, and the leather community. And you know, I didn't fit either one of those things, but I thought that was so wonderful because these were people on the front line. I mean, they flaunted everything that turned out to be the things that, you know, brought us all the wonderful goodies that we currently enjoy. But these people were on the front lines, and I so admired them. And it really was all about integrity.
And the visibility that if you're strutting down the street in chaps and a mirror cap, you're pretty visibly identified. And I'm sure we have a long way to go, but in terms of kind of social acceptance of this stuff, that you've got to be visible to make that happen.
I know you want to talk about primal play, so let's do that now.
Okay.
Could you begin by telling us what you mean by that, and then tell us what this is all about?
So last week, you had read that part of my FetLife profile where I talk about liking a kind of brutality that just, you know, is all about the fists and claws, and sweat and immediacy, which is really different from kind of elegant single-tailing or elegant flogging or beautiful, intricate rope work.
And you can do that in a tux, don't you know?
You can. And I'm fine doing it.
Look at me!
No, there are wonderful players and things that I love to watch. But what really gets my blood flowing is just getting really down and dirty and getting into that immediacy of using no toys but, you know, what my hands and my teeth. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. For me, and I love playing that way.
I'm guessing that some people can get lost in the, you know, externals, you know, the floggers and the paddles and the single tails and, you know, all the accoutrements, and and miss the point altogether about what it is that this is all about.
What it's about for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be about whatever you want it to be about.
Right.
But I like that intensity of connection, and for me the shortest path there is through primal play.
Right. So you mentioned earlier in our conversation last week, I believe, that you have been both dom and sub, but you also use the term top and bottom too. Is that a distinction that you want to make?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely identify more with top and bottom than dom and sub.
I see. Okay, cool.
If you look at the BDSM acronym that comes from actually three different acronyms that BD, bondage and discipline,
mm-hmm.
I believe,
mm-hmm.
DS, which is dominance and submission.
Right.
And SM, sadism and masochism.
Mm-hmm.
And those three things have been glommed together into that one kind of cute acronym BDSM. So really, the dominance and submission versus sadism and masochism are two different ways of approaching kink. Mm-hmm. Dominance and submission approaches kink through power exchange primarily. That one person has power and the other person gives power.
I see.
Where sadism and masochism are about the giving and the receiving of pain. So one is a mental relationship, and the other is a physical approach. And I really identify more with the physical approach. I think of myself as a sadist and a top. Mm-hmm. When I bottomed, which I don't do much more of anymore, but when I do, it's as a masochist and a bottom.
Interesting.
So they just resonate for me more. That being said, I'm really intrigued. I see my friends doing DS stuff, having these gorgeous, intense DS scenes or gorgeous, intense DS relationships. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I like intensity. So I'm stretching myself to learn about that and understanding how a big part of what gets me off as a sadist is the control. And what is control but dominance? Mm-hmm. But I'm sadist first, dominant second.
Got it. Two final questions. Who inspires you, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Who inspires me? Everyone around me inspires me. I love to learn from other people. And I steal shamelessly. If I see something I like, I'll talk to the person doing it and learn about it.
Very cool.
It's just a wonderful process. I had a wonderful, wonderful dinner a while back talking about a particular scene that I wanted to do with a couple of my, deeply twisted friends. And they gave me so many good ideas.
Very cool. I mean, I think that people are so generous along those lines, and in this community in particular, and I'm enormously grateful for that. Well, our time is up for today, and it's been so wonderful getting to know you. You are such a joy, so thoughtful and reflective, and I really, really appreciate that. I hope that there'll be opportunities. We have yet to meet, you and I, but I hope that we get to do that relatively soon.
Very much like that.
Good. So again, we can find you on Facebook and on FetLife. I'll have these links in today's podcast posting. And until we speak again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Thanks, Gina.
Thank you, Dr. Dick.
Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next Monday when I welcome a very special guest to my Erotic Mind series and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
What knockers!
Why, thanks. However, before we go, let me remind you that this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. Now, there's no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. Your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall-darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. One more thing before we conclude. I want to make sure that you know about my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now it's easy to see what's hot and what's not in the world of adult products. I and the Dr. Dick review crew review all kinds of adult-related goodies. Sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, fetish wear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Look for all of Dr. Dick's reviews on drdicksextoyreviews.com. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.